Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist.
And I'm Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist. How are you tonight, Ms. Laura?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Do you think that our pre-listeners heard us going on about the UK game?
Maybe so. I'm glad
my
voice returned.
Wasn't it?
Very intense. I've never been to a basketball game at Rupp Arena for the glorious University of Kentucky Wildcats before. And yesterday,
and they beat North Carolina, which was a big deal.
It was a big deal, and my husband is a huge UK basketball fan, and so he was so excited to be there, but I thought he was going to have a heart attack up until even at the last minute. I have a really funny picture of him on Facebook with where I've taken it, where he's kind of going, whew, you can see the relief come over him, like, oh, I can't believe they won. But it was so exciting and so much fun, and I'm so glad we got to do it because the day before I had a great conference in Lexington. That was a really fun day, and it's always fun to be with your home state people, and they have the same issues, and everybody talks about the same stuff, and the president of our state organization was there, so that was fun to get to meet her in person, and lots of other people that have established email relationships with me that they've asked me questions for about a year now, and I met this one person in, or several people at Kisha that were like that, and they've emailed me lots of times over the course of the last year, and so to see them again, that was a lot of fun. So it was just a great, great day. Oh, and people from Michigan came, and that was exciting to get.
See, you're getting visitors, whether you want them or not. They're coming on down.
Oh, they were so sweet and so much fun, and then really nice therapist from Ohio was there, and a person that I'd met when I was in West Virginia came back for round two in Lexington.
Wow.
She came, and so that was exciting. So it was a really, really fun day, and I've just had the best 2 days, and today trying to recover and get these projects done that I'm supposed to be working on. So it's been a really fun couple of days. But that was the last conference I have scheduled for 2011, so I'm going to be off for a couple months, and I hope that I'm going to churn out some projects that we've talked about here on the show and get those done while we're not traveling in the winter months. So I hope I can be productive and make good use of my time. I do want to say before we get going that today is December 4th, and it is my mother's birthday, and you know she is a very consistent
happy
listener.
Happy birthday, Peggy. I'm going to spare her and not sing happy birthday to her because I've had more than one two-year-old cover his or her ears when I do that, and I know Peggy couldn't stand it. But happy birthday. I hope she has a great one.
She's having a great birthday. I just talked to her right before the show, and she doesn't get to listen live anymore because, you know, my dad is a pastor of a church, and they have church on Sunday night, and so she's going to church, and they have a special group coming in to sing Christmas music, so she was getting ready for that, but she is having a great birthday, but I didn't want to tell her happy birthday, so that when she listens in a day or two, she'll get a kick out of that,
well,
because, you know,
birthday.
I thought she was our only listener for a long time, so.
And then darned if they didn't show up at your conferences and tell you, nope, they actually listen.
Well, I will tell you this. We have a listener who has been taking notes from the podcast.
Oh,
and
no.
I'm not going to say her name because I didn't ask her if I could say her name, but she asked me some really technical questions about the stages of play series that we did, and she has transcribed that into a handout that she gives to parents, and then she's also doing that with the social series, and she made one about the cognitive prerequisites for language, so she was asked again to hear that someone's taking notes. I told Johnny, oh, that'll really freak Kate out, so let me tell her that tonight on air.
Well, is she going to forward her handouts to you? Because that would be kind of cool to have those.
She did, and I would be glad to forward those to you. Yeah, I made a couple little changes and emailed her back and said, this is what I think we should change on this, and here's why. So I'll be glad to forward those to you because I think they'll be great references. I'm putting those in the conference manuals from now on because she's done the work. So
yeah.
She was so nice to do that.
Yeah, that's
really, really
neat.
I really appreciated that. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Okay, tonight we are talking about our very favorite seasonal activities that we do in December. And we both celebrate Christmas, and so we're talking about Christmas activities. And, again, I don't mean to offend anyone by saying Christmas, but we aren't very we don't always think about the politically correct stuff here on Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate, and that's what we celebrate. So we're going with Christmas. So we're talking about those activities tonight with our favorite things to use. And lots of the things that I'm talking about are on my new Christmas DVD, which is for sale. If you haven't heard about that or read about that, you can get some information on my website at teachmetotalk.com, and I'm so excited about that. That's in the pre-sale period now, so get it while it's still cheap. And that project is turning out really, really cute, and so I'll just direct people to there. But so some of these activities that we're talking about tonight, I am demonstrating for you on that DVD. And we'll talk about not only the activity tonight, but how we use those with children who are at different levels and what you would work on if a child were not talking yet, if you were mostly working on expressive language, if you were mostly working on receptive language, if you were still trying to establish that social connection, the kinds of therapy activities and the kinds of things that we would focus on, even using, you know, lots of these toys with lots of different kinds of children, because that happens a lot. You can take one activity and make it really relative and really appropriate for many different goals across the kids that you see. So that's what I hope that we talk about tonight. One of the first Christmassy toys that I acquired a long time ago is that Fisher-Price Christmas choo-choo train set. And then I bought the characters and the little houses that go with that. And I don't even remember which set came first or what pieces came together, because in my therapy bag, they've just all been lumped together for a long time. But is that even available as a purchase for a new item right now? Do you know, Kate, have you seen it in the stores?
I haven't seen it this season, but I will say in years gone by, Target seemed to be the place that has the most of that stuff, and I don't know if they kind of have an exclusive on it or not, and I don't know that that's true this year, but I know in the past it's been Target that seemed to have the most Fisher-Price Christmas theme stuff.
Mm-hmm. So. And it's a little pull Christmas train, and trains are just usually a go-to toy for almost any two-year-old that you would meet, especially our friends that are little boys. And the trains are supposed to play music, but mine don't play music anymore, and I have not replaced the batteries, as I often do. The first time the batteries wear out with a toy, I don't always put the batteries back in, because I like it when I provide the language and the sound effects and the things that go along with the toy, oftentimes better than what the toy manufacturer thought the toy should say. So you have that said, don't you, Kate?
You know, I don't really think I have the I have multiple Fisher-Price trains, and I have a Fisher-Price. I have some of the character Christmas characters, and
okay,
I have these kind of like little house things that
– yeah.
They're Christmassy theme, but I don't have the actual train.
Wow. Okay. I do have the train, and it used to play some kind of music. I was going to ask you what it played. I think it played Jingle Bells or something like that. But I don't even play with that. I don't even use that music-y part of it anymore. And just use Santa, and we don't ever really even call him Santa. I think we both say ho-ho, don't we? Don't you say ho-ho more than you say Santa? Yeah. So ho-ho choo-choo.
Oh, yes. I've been given that a lot of work this week.
Yeah, and I like to use it with the houses, because you can make, then if you have a child that's older, you know, 2.5 or so, and their play skills are coming right along, and they are able to play with characters and be have attention for more than the, just the choo-choo train. You can make Santa, and I think I have a mama with my set, the Mrs. Claus, but I just call her the mama, and an elf or two and some reindeer, and we make those characters visit the homes, and then while they're in the house, we can make them go to sleep. You know, and of course, we call that playing night-night. So that's something really fun to do, and you can target your receptive language skills that you've been working on. And this is what I love about using a seasonal activity or seasonal characters that you don't use all the time, even though I do keep a little Fisher-Price Santa or Ho-Ho in my toy bag all year long because it's something lots of kids recognize. And, again, I really like using that ho-ho-ho. That's a good one. A lot of kids will try to imitate that long before they may try to imitate more functional words, and it's always so funny, and it really gets their attention, and so I keep little Santa in my bag all year. But my original point with this was when you are using a holiday-specific set of toys, this is a great time to see what the kids on your caseload have actually generalized. And so if you have children receptively that you've been playing with baby dolls or characters or whatever you've done and you've been working on concepts like early play skills involving following directions like feed the baby, give the baby a drink, brush the baby's hair, put the hat on the baby, make the baby go to sleep, give the baby a kiss, all those things, you can see how much they really, truly understand and what words I like to say they really own with what concepts by using those same kinds of play routines with a different set of characters or a different set of materials, because then you'll know if they truly understand what those words mean and have linked meaning. So if I've been working on those kinds of things, again, with a different toy, as soon as I bring out Santa, I start with, oh, give him a kiss. Oh, let's make him eat. Where's his food? Oh, here's Santa's house. Let's have Santa go night-night. And see how much they really, really remember and, again, have generalized from one context to another. And so that gives you so much information, because kids who don't seem to get it and who don't seem to remember and are able to do the same kinds of things that they did with whatever previous toys that you've performed that with, you know that you still have lots of teaching to do if they're not able to generalize that. And that also gives you some idea about where they are cognitively. If they are not able to make that transition without much effort on your part, then you know, oh my goodness, this receptive language issue is a pretty big deal for this kid. Have you noticed things like that, Kate, with your Christmas stuff that you're using?
Yes, I have, and it's always interesting because I think it's natural to assume that if they get it in one context, they're going to get it in another, and sometimes that is not the case.
Right. It is really cute, though, for the kids who do get it, because their eyes light up like, okay, what a great idea, and they start to do that, and it's just really cute when you see kind of the light bulb come on, like, oh, what, I can do this, and it's a great way to kind of check those receptive language skills without really testing, and then to make sure that the teaching that you've done, again, that you've focused on the concept and the child has learned that, not necessarily just, it's just a therapy routine that you do with one specific toy and you don't ever talk about those words or use those words again. Sometimes that happens with children that we don't really realize that's even happened unless we purposefully make ourselves think about particular play routines that we've used to target, say, you know, new, certain commands or verbs or, again, prepositions. But put Santa in the house. Take Santa out. Put Santa on the choo-choo. Those kinds of words, you may have only worked on that with maybe one particular set of toys, and you haven't even realized that the child hasn't generalized that until you purposefully plan an activity to target the kinds of words that you've looked at with a different set of toys. So it's always interesting, and holidays really give you a natural opportunity to expand and think about how you can make sure that your kids are carrying over the things that you've targeted the last several weeks or months. I like that little train set, too, because it has a place for the reindeer on there, and then it looks like there's some hay there and some water, so I always like to pretend like the reindeer's eating and drinking. And that's really fun for the kids who really aren't able to imitate words yet, but they may be starting to imitate some of those sound effect kind of things, and the slurpee, you know, drinking the water. What water sound do you use, Kate? What drinking sound do you do? Yeah. Thank you.
Always.
Yeah. I forgot that part, but I do that too. And then with eating, you know, you can do a yum, yum, yum. I usually do a... What sound do you do for eating?
Usually num, num, num. Kind of
yeah.
like my
See, it's funny
voice.
The different variations, yeah. And if a kid's mom uses something else, I'll try to use what mom does and then, you know, throw in my little sound effect things too. Sometimes you'll see that a child will imitate one sound effect kind of word over another, and that's always interesting to me. I'm always sitting there trying to think, okay, is that because the sound he's doing, even if I can't quite transcribe what sound he's using, is that somehow easier? How is that related to the other sounds that he uses? You know, and again, it might be a kid who's not even using a lot of words yet, but maybe he's doing some animal sounds or some car and truck noises or something like that. And, you know, we're always, or I am anyway, looking to apply theory there and say, is that sound easier for him? What might be some other kinds of cute little noises that I can introduce? Because we want kids to expand where they are, but a lot of times we have to stay at that same level. And so for a kid, again, who's not imitating a lot of words yet, but he is using lots of sound effect kinds of things, this might be an opportunity, you know, with a different set of toys to model some sounds you've never made before, or again, to carry that over to a new context. Maybe he can make, you know, a choo-choo sound when he plays with Thomas, but will he do it when he plays with these trains? Maybe he makes a kind of a crashing sound with other cars. Will he do the same thing with this train set? So, again, that always gives you some information. And sometimes you can tweak it a little bit. A kid might get really locked into only doing a certain set of noises, but then you bring out a whole new toy, a whole new theme, and you might get different things than you've ever heard before.
I've been trying to Google the Fisher-Price Christmas train.
Oh, to see if it's still available.
Yeah, I'm not having a lot of luck finding it because I'm really not that familiar with what it is.
I bought these a long time ago. I think more than 10 years ago. And
mm-hmm.
so they're probably oldies but goodies. You may be able to find it on eBay, or
yeah.
Or on sometimes Amazon has toys that they, you know, get it from an obscure place. That
right.
might be somewhere to check for that too. So that's that activity. Let's move on to something I do with almost every kid at this time of year, and that's sing Jingle Bells. It's my all-time favorite Christmas song for toddlers. And again, a lot of kids aren't able to do all the words. Sometimes a kid will be able to say bell, and if they can say that, I really do the completion method where we've sung the song a lot of times, and then I start pausing and singing jingle and really doing that whole expectant look and maybe even putting my lips together like I'm about to say bells and see if they'll fill in the blank and do that. This is a really fun activity to do with family, so you can get siblings to join along. I don't ever sing it without props. I always bring enough jingle bells for everyone, and boy, do I have a jingle bell box. I have really collected jingle bells over the years. I just bought a new set of bells from Lowe's. I think it was Lowe's instead of Home Depot, and they are my favorite bells ever just because of how they sound. It's just like a door hanger set. mm-hmm. on a leather strap, and I just love the way these bells sound, and they've been a lot of fun. And I, again, like to sing with props and like to do, you know, this is why we use toys during therapy to play, other than it's developmentally appropriate, and we're working on play skills too. But when you use a prop with a child, it really takes the focus off what they should do with their mouths. And if this child happens to be apraxic or have motor planning problems, sometimes we focus so much on, say this, copy me, repeat what I say. It's your turn. You say it. Say it. Sometimes that pressure, especially at the very beginning, if this is a really new kid for you, sometimes that direct, confrontational say it is not always the best strategy right at the very beginning. Now, that's not to say that we won't use that, and sometimes I think using that pressure and that, you know, I call it pleasant persistence, where I'm having a kid say it, tell me, that certainly has its place, and I do that and use that, and sometimes I think that's what's the difference between why a session might be so successful versus a therapist who might not use that kind of, come on, you can do it, approach. But at the very beginning, sometimes with kids, the props take the focus off, do it like me, and they almost pop those little words out and imitate you better when you're not giving those direct cues. And I know we've talked about that here on the show before.
Right. It's like Jingle Bells. I always tell parents they need the pressure, but the pressure makes it harder. So anything you can do to kind of give it but yet distract from the fact that you're giving that pressure can be helpful.
Yeah. And so having fun and singing and, you know, again, what 2-year-old, 3-year-old, 4-year-old is not going to want to shake the heck out of those bells? I mean, that, again, if you have a mom who's really sensitive auditorily, that might drive her bonkers before you're finished with that activity with everybody ringing those bells. But that's a really fun thing to do. And so I'll put them in a Christmas bucket, or, you know, now you can get the, and I've seen them a lot at stores this year, the boxes that are designed to be gift boxes. Do you know what I'm talking about? They're usually square or some other kind of shaped, and you can get them on the Christmas paper aisle. But I always try to put my bells in something like that so that it looks like you're opening a present or something really fun, so it looks more Christmassy themed. And then we take the bells out and sing Jingle Bells. And my favorite part of Jingle Bells is at the end of the verse where we, you know, you're singing Jingle Bells, Jingle Bells, Jingle All the Way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Hey!
Hey!
And boy, do I scream and yell that. And the first time or two you do it, it's, you can almost scare a kid, but that's fun because they like that. And again, it's so novel, and they maybe have never heard that song before, or maybe no one has sung it that enthusiastically before or made it that fun. And so that's always a fun thing to do. And when I sing Hey, I always hold both of my arms in the air. And so if you have a kid that's just at the point that you're working on any kind of motor imitation, to get a kid to hold his or her arms up with you or in imitation of you, or even just leave them up for a second or two after you have lifted them, after you've provided that assistance, that's a great therapy goal, and it's a great way to work that in, and it's a way to make that motor imitation goal fun and appropriate for this time of year. So that's, singing Jingle Bells is something, an activity that can really be adapted for and appropriate for lots of different kids at lots of different levels. And your point, Kate, it does not matter if you can't sing. It does not matter if you feel like you're a terrible singer. A lot of therapists get embarrassed to even sing in front of parents. And that's almost even better because it totally takes the pressure off mom and dad if you're a not-so-great singer. And so I think that therapists should lose their inhibitions and really just go for it. And a song like Jingle Bells is a fun, fun, fun one to do this time of year. And if I have more than one set of bells, and again, I have some that are just, I have some jingle bells that are shaped like a wreath, so they're easy to hold even if your motor skills are terrible. And I have some that are just a little handled, you know, just one little circle that's a handle. So lots of different, you know, can be adapted for lots of different kids, even kids, again, that are struggling with motor skills. And then we'll, everybody has to put them back in the bucket, and then I shake it up and act like I'm really mixing it up, which I don't know why that's so fun for toddlers, but anytime you act like you're going to mix up something, even if it's two puzzle pieces in your hand, they get such a big kick out of that, don't they?
I'm only laughing because I agree that they do, but why, I don't know. Undeniable truths about very young children, and that's one of them. And I use it with lots of activities, and I think, why do you like that? I don't know. But, hey, if it keeps you interested and with me a few couple of minutes longer, then it's worth doing. But it always tickles
me
that it always works.
And if a kid seems like he's losing attention with this activity, and I think, oh, my gosh, I need him to really repeat hey or hold his hand, see if I can get him to hold his hands up just one time by himself when we get to that part, I'll say, oh, we have to put him back. And then we put him up, and I say, help me shake the box. Let's mix them up. And that brings them right back. They think that is so funny.
And I have so many kids who will pop out shake too, or at least some version of shake. You know, I always usually use a weird voice when I do it.
Yeah, I do too, or I'll do shake, 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 shake. And they'll really try to repeat that because, again, it's novel and it's a whispered kind of thing. And they'll, if I'm not doing the screechy shake it, you know, I'll do the shake, 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 shake. And kids think that is really funny. And sometimes changing your volume when you've gone from talking in a regular volume to whispering, that's another time when some children might be more apt to imitate, sometimes even before you've heard much of anything else. Or I'll hear a kid doing something kind of weird, whispery, and I'll think, oh my gosh, she's trying to imitate shake, 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 shake when I say shake, 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 shake. And so you have sometimes have to listen really carefully, but it's those early, early attempts. And sometimes it's the really, for lack of a better word, weird stuff that they try to imitate first because it's novel and it's fun, and that's what little brains like. They're attracted to that sort of vocalization, so use that. And I, again, try to, like you said, Kate, use it when you might be losing a kid's attention and you want to bring him back and see if you can get one more repetition of that activity. So Jingle Bells is a winner. That's a cute little song to do. Okay,
Laura, you can get the train on Amazon, by the way. Fisher-Price Little People Musical Christmas Train. Looks like it's $32.95 on Amazon.
Cute.
So it's still available, but I did not find it on, like, Walmart or Target site. It's through Amazon, so it must be kind
of
on the way out.
Yeah, kind of a specialty toy now. All right, cool. Okay, my next toy that I want to talk about is a brand new toy that I've just gotten this season, and it's a Christmas tree. I ordered it from a therapy company called One Step Ahead. There's a link on teachmetotalk.com's Facebook page that you'll have to go down, though, because I ordered mine about a month ago. So you'll have to scroll on down if you want to find that link so that you can look at that. But it's a cute felt Christmas tree. It comes in three layers that look like Christmas leaves, so you can put it together. It comes in a cute little box. It is, though, material. It's not plastic or anything you can wash off, so you're not going to really want to use this with mouthy kids. If you're a mom and want to get it just for your kids, you know, of course, that's different because you're just one kid. But I'm always hesitant to play with toys with kids that I don't feel like I can really clean it. So if it's a kid who's really drooly, I probably won't use this toy. But it's so cute. It comes with about 30 different little ornaments that, again, are made from cloth, but they have Velcro, and so they stick to the Christmas tree. So I can imagine that lots of kids would have fun, especially the crafty little girls, rearranging those ornaments in lots of different configurations. So if you have a child that's really imitating and just starting to imitate functional words or real words, this would be a great activity because you can get lots of different words. And again, that there's some animals like duck and bear. Then there's some Christmas vocabulary on there, like stocking, and there's a box that if a kid is, most of the time I just say box, but if they are really imitating, if they have a G, I'll do gift. If they're moving along, I might even try present and just see what the kid could get. There's a candy cane, and of course candy is a sign and a word that I introduced pretty early. And you can do the signs with these as well as the words if you have a child who's really starting to sign. So there's an angel on the top. It comes with an angel who, there's another little ornament that's a star. So lots of early vocabulary opportunities too. Some of the words may be a little bit hard, but again, if you have a kid who's just, who's a pretty consistent imitator or a pretty consistent signer, meaning that you're beyond that first level of signs, this would be a great way to target some other vocabulary. I haven't used this yet receptively because I don't really have a kid that it's appropriate for right now, but it would be a great receptive language activity too, because you could put two or three of those little ornaments, and again, with vocabulary that you're working on, you could set them out and say, you know, let's put the reindeer on. Find the star, find the heart, find the whatever, and work on those things receptively too. So that's a really, really cute therapy activity. Have you
seen
that?
I'm looking at it. No, I'm looking at it right now. I went to Teach Me to Talk and found it. It looks very cute. I didn't realize that it was so, I had it when you were talking about it initially, I thought it might be flat, like just kind of like a felt board kind of thing. But it's much more three-dimensional than that, so it's cute.
It's very cute. And don't buy
how
a cake.
How did the little
I ordered you one today. What?
Oh, you did?
For your little
cool
Christmas prezzy.
Good thing you said that, because I was, it's on sale. I was like, oh,
I know.
I was thinking,
oh, no, I better tell her because she's going to order it, and I don't want her to. I ruined the surprise. But I know you're going to love it.
It's
really
very
cute. Yeah.
Now, how do they stick on there? Is it Velcro or just the felt?
It's Velcro.
Oh, they're just that.
You know what?
Itself.
Now,
kids, that's another
now,
universal. Kids love Velcro.
But you know what? Now that I say that, it might just stick. But I think I can't get it right now. I can't reach it. It's in the other room.
I'm thinking there must be stick them on, pull them off, hook and loop. It's Velcro.
Yeah, I was thinking it was Velcro. Mm-hmm. So if you are having kids that really aren't at the point that they can imitate a lot of signs yet, you might be sticking with your tried and true generic more and please and just have them really push it on there. And, you know, when we say push, we don't just say push. We say push. And kids try to imitate that sound. So that would be really fun if you, again, have a kid who's really more doing more they're vocalizing, but it's not really words yet. They're kind of at that sound effect stage. That would be what I would use with that kind of kid. See if I could get him to do, you know, or some version of that when we're pushing. I'm sure you do that trick too, Kate, don't you?
Absolutely. And pull the same.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Same kind of concept. Yeah.
And it's amazing how many kids will imitate those when you do them in that exaggerated kind of goofy way. If you just said push or pull, they'd be like, whatever. But
not
you,
so
you
fun.
Put that much weirdness in it, and they're like, I like that. I'm going to try that.
Yeah, and you'll have kids that, again, they may not be getting anything but that neutral vowel, that but for a lot of kids, when we're starting in therapy, that's where you start. You meet them where they are. And just to get them to consistently imitate anything is okay. You know, you look at all that, and this whole My new Christmas DVD ties into this, and I use the Christmas tree activity on there. And the whole premise of that DVD is to figure out where a kid is in that hierarchy of vocal imitation. And again, a lot of kids that we get, mom will say in the initial evaluation, how many words does he have? Well, he might have zero, or he might have two or three. But then you start to ask, well, is he noisy when he plays? And she might say, well, you know, he says he kind of tries to bark like a dog, and he kind of tries to meow like our cat, and he sort of makes some kind of weird car noise. But that's about it. But see, she hasn't even thought about those things as language or speech attempts. And so you think, okay, that's where he's noisy, and that's usually what kids think are more fun. And so you, again, meet them where they are, and you don't just go right into real words with a lot of those kids, even though you might be cueing it and modeling it to see if they can get it. But you purposefully say, I'm going to try a lot of these sounds or a lot of these exclamatory words and see if I can't get some of that first, because so many of our kids, again, aren't really ready to imitate more functional words. But if you'll back it up several steps, and if you are a new listener and have never heard me talk about that hierarchy of vocal imitation, I talk about it in my conferences, and it's also in a section of Teach Me to Talk, the therapy manual. But I've got a booklet that I'm sending with this DVD that explains that whole hierarchy, and then I talk about it in a parent tutorial or parent professional tutorial at the end of the DVD. So again, if that's new information for you, if that's new theory, you've never heard about that or thought about that before, how you can use those kinds of vocalizations to work a kid up to words, you know, that you'll see that on the DVD. And we certainly use that in therapy all the time. And I can't even stop myself from doing those little sound effecty kind of things. It's just become so natural with how I play with kids, and kids are really, really drawn to that. And if you're a therapist who's never even thought about that before, start thinking about the kids on your caseload that are brand new talkers or that have been completely silent, and the kinds of things that they start to imitate first. Often it's those kinds of noises that you hear sometimes for weeks or months before you get a real word. That's been your experience too, hasn't it, Kate?
Absolutely. And again, I think that speaks to you're giving the model they need, but you're taking some of the pressure off, and
right,
you're making it more playful and more animated, and that seems to work.
And yeah. And for some of those kids, they don't know how to imitate. And so when you get it so complicated that they can't do it, like with a real word. I mean, after all, they can't imitate real words, or else, you know, at the very beginning, why would they have been referred for therapy? There would be no, you know that a kid has that problem if you were just starting to see him on your caseload, and hardly any kid that we initially get is a proficient verbal imitator. And so you have to really think about working up to that in tiny baby steps and not starting off, for the majority of kids, with really complicated words, or sometimes, again, they're not even words at all. He or she's not ready for real words yet. And again, you might be teaching more, and you might be modeling that word over and over, and I hope that you are. That's how I do it too. But I know, gosh, this kid's going to need to learn how to imitate first, and that usually starts with actions and gestures and play, and then that'll move to, sometimes it's even movements with your mouth, even when there's no sound, but more often than not, there are these, again, what we're calling play words or exclamatory words that you might not even be able to, again, transcribe it or spell it yet. It might just even be an, you know, or a little, any kind of little noise that we were talking about. Kids may need that in-between step before they're able to do real words. And so the theory of all that is explained in the new Christmas DVD, and again in those other products that I've mentioned, if you've never thought about that before. But again, even when you're working on, when you are at the point where a kid can really imitate words, sometimes don't you interject some of those silly little sounds anyway, Kate, like you talked about before, to take the pressure off, because then that's easy. So for those kinds of kids, you might start your session with modeling lots of those kinds of things, because you know that they can do it and you know they like it. And then again, you work them up to those real words.
Well, Laura, it's probably partly that and partly the fact that, like you, I can't really stop myself from doing that because it's so much a part of my routine. But, yeah,
I
mean, it just keeps their interest. It keeps them more focused. It makes it more playful and more fun. And, you know, that's what works. So the other day I had a funny example. This little boy who has a diagnosis of autism. And he's just kind of just beginning. He'll sometimes imitate the quack quack for the duck or the meow or the ruff ruff. But I had our little Tupperware boxes, the old blocks that we're fond of that we put things inside. And I had little snakes inside of those rubbery snakes. Normally I do boing when I stretch them. You know, I that's kind of my sound effect for stretching the, and when I let it snap. But that wasn't, he was interested in pulling them and snapping them, but he wasn't giving me anything with boing. So instead, and this is a sound I don't usually use because I think it's, well, it kind of sounds like a gun, but.
And see, I have no problem with that, but go ahead.
I know, but I'm kind of weird about that, so I don't usually use it, but I used it. And I just stretched it and I went, you know, like when I was letting it snap instead of the boing. Well, wouldn't you know, he popped that right out, boy. He was into that.
Yeah.
I don't usually use that one, but I just thought, well, the boing isn't getting anything, and I was doing stretch. That's another one along with pull and push that I always do in a very exaggerated, goofy way.
Right.
But he wasn't giving me anything on the boing. And so for some reason, I just went to... And, oh, boy, that got him. He did it about 10 times. And for him, any imitation is huge.
Sure.
You know, that's where he is. So, truthfully, I didn't know how to write in my note to his mother because I see him at school. He imitated.
Yeah, how would you transcribe that? Yeah.
I don't know what I said. I put something. But I was happy to get it. That's the truth. So
exactly.
Will I use that again with him later? You bet. This
there
point,
you go.
Anything he imitates is huge and great. And he likes it. You know,
that would be cute
one.
With your little toy that shoots balls or rockets. That would be a cute sound. See if he would do it. Do it with those. Yeah. That's cute. Yeah, and so anything like that, and again, your goal here is imitation, and your goal is, you know, imitates a variety of sounds, and so a lot of therapists will read a goal like that or read a recommendation like that and think that with toddlers that we're talking about, you know, imitates a single phoneme, and for you non-speech pathologists, that would mean like a single p for p or a s for s or a t for t. That's not what Kate and I are talking about. We're talking about more sound effect kinds of sounds. And again, it's more fun. It gets their attention. And like you said, Kate, sometimes just out of the blue, you'll stumble upon something that a child will find so, you know, irresistible that he tries to do it almost even before he plans to do it. It just kind of pops out of that little mouth. So I love it when we get a little nugget of gold like that.
I may have to break my non-militaristic rule and start using more often because he got it. Really, I was like, oh, he got it. You know, I didn't expect him to, but since my other boing thing just really wasn't working with him, I went to... And it works, so I might have to go break that rule and start using that a little more. But
you can use it with that toy that shoots balls. I say that sound with that little ball toy that shoots balls all the time.
But even that,
yeah.
Do you see? I don't. I do pop.
Well, you know, I'm from a long line of hunters and gun owners, so that doesn't really bother me.
I know, and I am not. So for me, it's like, oh, I just hate to do any of these gun things. Like, I call that a popper, even though it looks a lot like a gun, but...
And see, I usually call it the ball gun, so there you go.
Yeah, I call it the ball popper. It is rather gun-like, but... Anyway, yeah. I don't have too many moms.
And if it bothers a mom, I would never do that. But I've just found that most moms here in Kentucky aren't really bothered by that.
They probably aren't. I've had a couple on my case who actually got BB guns before they were three. So there you go.
Yeah. There you go. That's so funny. Okay, we are not going to get finished with this longer list, and I really want to get through this entire list in this one show. So let's move on. Other fun things that I've done for, again, this might be for kids who are a little further along, and we are really working on vocabulary, is hide items in a stocking. I did that when I had play group, and that was a really fun activity. So if you're working with a group of siblings or seeing children in the daycare where you end up seeing the whole class, this might be a fun thing to do, is just hide even things that aren't Christmas related. Just, you could put animals in there, or you could put, you know, little plastic animals, or any little car and a ball, and just lots of little things that you might have hidden in or used in other contexts. Put them in the stocking, and then again, you could shake it up and pass it to a kid, and he has to reach in and pull one out. And if you're naming, you know, if you're working on imitating signs or words, that would be a cute thing to do. You could even, with kids that aren't quite there yet, that you're still working on a lot of receptive language or play, you could play with that toy or use it in the way that it's intended for a few minutes, and then when their attention is gone, use it, you know, bring the stocking out and use the next item. So I think that would be fun. I think that would be fun for, I have used it in a group setting with lots of kids, and that, again, you know, the whole anticipation of what's in the stocking that we can't see, you know, that seems to be really, really fun for young children. Do you want to say anything about that, Kate?
Oh, I was trying to figure out. I just bought a selection of Christmas-related little toys, and I know you have these, and I've had them in the past, but I just got them. I was trying to find a receipt to help me recall if I got them at Walmart. I think I got them at Myers, but I may have gotten them at Walmart. And one of the cute ones is a top. It's like a Santa Claus head, and you wind it up, and then you push his hat down, and the top spins with the light. But I can't remember where I got it. It was like either Myers or Walmart. So, no, I don't have anything to add about that.
Hmm? Yeah, but that would be a cute way to present those. I've also had little wind-up toys that are Santa's driving the car and driving the airplane and driving the choo-choos. I think you probably have had those too, Kate.
Right.
And that might be something to put in a... Yeah, to put in a bucket or a stocking or something that you're doing. If you have a kid who's, again, starting to really imitate but isn't really that consistent yet, calling ho-ho or calling the car or, you know, again, even having the kid, you know, saying, oh, I think there's a car in here, let's call car, car. Leaning into a stocking or that bucket, boy, that's magical too for a lot of kids. They might imitate that in that context. That whole calling is very enticing. Now, you can't use it when a kid really isn't ready to imitate yet, but if you have a new imitator, that's a really fun way to do, to get a word attempt there, because it's different. And again, you're taking the focus off really saying the word. So I use those buckets and stockings and things like that in that way too. And anytime we call, and I know we've talked about this before, Kate, don't you instinctively put your hands up beside your mouth like you're
always
making a little megaphone? Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Always. And kids seem to like that too. I don't know why, but they do.
They do. They do. Okay, if we have a group of children, or again, children that are, you're looking for, that may have some cognitive splinter skills, and these would be our kids that might be on the spectrum who really like visual patterns or who really like colors, and maybe have some older brothers and sisters that you're, again, trying to incorporate into the therapy session. Matching tasks with winter-related materials or Christmas-related materials. These are activities I've done for a really long time. I get solid color Christmas bows and have solid color matching construction paper and might have a whole bag of bows so that you'll have 10 red bows and 10 blue bows and gold bows and silver bows and white bows, whatever you have, and then you line the construction paper up across the room and you have the children with you on one the other end of the room, and they have to pick a bow and then run, match it to the paper, and then run back. Those kinds of relay races are so fun. And you, if you're working on expressive stuff, you can, you know, have them say, I want more, or if they're a kid, that their quirk is that they already know their colors. And again, I'm not really concerned about teaching colors, but boy, there are lots of kids that gravitate toward that. And this is how you might use those quirks. If mom is maybe a teacher and has really overtaught those darn colors, this might be a way to really use that. For our kids who, again, I think about my little friends over the years that have been on the spectrum who really might be interested in colors, but their auditory processing or following verbal directions isn't so great, I might use this kind of task to work on that. So I might say, get 2 red bows, and they have to dig in the bag until they, you know, listen to what I'm saying and then follow the direction and then run, match that to the paper and then run back. Those kinds of little games are tons of fun, especially if you have siblings that you're trying to incorporate. And again, it's a way to use the kids' quirks that I would never really work on colors and those pre-academic things. But if a kid already knows that and I think, gosh, I want to use what he already knows to target following more advanced directions or just that processing piece, that's certainly a way to do that. I mentioned mittens. Many years ago when I ran that playgroup program, one year at winter, like a winter clearance sale, I bought probably 20 pairs of toddler and preschooler mittens of different colors and different patterns. And again, a matching game where you can use it in that same kind of context with, and I hardly ever do it when it's just one kid at a time. It's usually when it's with a group of siblings or, again, at a daycare or something like that, that matching kind of activity. Now, again, I care about matching only because it's a cognitive skill that, again, lends itself so many times. As speech pathologists, we can get hyper-focused on working on the cognitive stuff and kind of forget that we're really there to work on language. But matching is an important developmental step for math, for, again, higher-level language. When you start to teach same and different, children have to have a basic understanding of that concept for matching. Before children can expressively identify colors, they have to identify them receptively, and then before that, they have to be able to match them. So it is a valid therapy activity for a speech pathologist to work on if you don't get too crazy and, you know, work on it for 8 weeks in a row for, you know, 8 hours you're spending on that. I would never do that, but I certainly would incorporate it as a way to maybe break up working on more difficult activities or, again, kind of as a stepping stone skill. As a DI, though, you don't have a problem with working on matching, do you, Kate?
I don't, and I'm probably, well, I know I am more of a language DI than most, but I certainly do matching, and there are those kids, like, just with, like, the color, quirky color kids who really get in like colors. There are kids who are really, really visual, and that's
right.
A strength for them, and like the rest of us, we all like those things that we're good at, and so for those kids, this would be a great activity because they sometimes can match as quickly as I can, which, not that I'm great,
yeah,
but they're 2 and I'm old, so you'd think I'd be way better, and they, you know, they see something,
yeah,
and you can just see their little wheels turn, and boom, they got it, you know, so for
right,
those kids, this is something they would really like, and
yeah,
stick with
and for those
for a
kids, yeah, and the kids that you have your hard time kind of keeping their attention, you might do things, you know, for the first 40 minutes of the session, and then you feel like, oh, my goodness, she's about or he's about to be done with me, and then you bring out a task that they're naturally attracted to and good at, and you use it to keep them with you for 15 minutes longer than they normally would have been. So that's how I like to use those activities, too, and I kind of think about that as using a kid's quirks, and it is perfectly fine. You just have to remember, you know, what your real intent is there. Am I really concerned that a kid is identifying red or blue or knows that the striped black and white glove matches the other striped one? You know, I'm going to try to get a language angle there too. And so you have to just think about where the kid is language-wise and make sure that you're including some of that, unless he's just really almost done with you, and then you just stick to attention and participation, and just that he's with you and not running away or having a fit is, you know, good enough on a lot of days with a lot of kids. It's the truth.
End of a session. We'll take that. Yeah, that might be all you
can
get.
Yeah, it might be. There's some really cute ideas on TeachMeToTalk.com's Facebook page for making sensory bins. We talked a lot about this in the fall, and we take generally plastic containers, like Rubbermaid containers, and fill them with things. And to transition your fall wonderful sensory boxes that you all made, change those out for Christmas so that you are not a boring therapist. There are some directions on there for coloring your rice or your pasta if you want to be that fancy. I'll just tell you right away, I have never, nor do I plan to really do that this year. But if that, you know, if you are that creative, go for it. Other things that you might use instead of rice or pasta or beans, you might find some small styrofoam balls to look like snow. I saw some bins that was a really cute idea. Or Christmas-colored pom-poms. That would be cute to even mix in with your rice or pasta or beans. I think lots of kids would find that really tactilely interesting and want to touch those little different colored pom-poms. I've seen some this year that are sparkly and would be pretty darn enticing. You could hide non-breakable Christmas ornaments would be kind of fun to put in there. Or your little Christmas characters that you've used with the train, you could put them in a little sensory bin. I would put my little individual jingle bells in there, smaller bells, that would be fun to find, or any other small holiday-related items. So you can use your Rubbermaid boxes that you bought in the fall and switch those out for really cute Christmassy kind of themed things. And I put on the TeachMeToTalk.com's Facebook page links to blogs of moms that have done lots of really creative ideas. So that might be a way for moms or therapists to get some other ideas too. They have a lot of OT-related things that, again, looking at it, you know, I think we can about make anything a language activity. But if we have any OT friends that are listening, lots of fine motor and sensory activities are in some of those really cute blogs. So take a look at those.
And that's on Teach Me to Talk? You linked them on there?
Yeah. On the Facebook page, yeah. Other things that I've done for Christmas, I've bought Christmas cookie cutters and done them with Play-Doh. I'm sure you've done that too, Kate.
Yes, I have. Although I have to admit, I'm not a huge Play-Doh person. I do it sometimes, but I never seem to get the results I think that I should.
Well, I think it depends on the kid. And I haven't played Play-Doh in a long time. The last time I played Play-Doh is when we did that show about how to take, I think this was in the summer maybe, where we had a therapist write in about what she could do with zoo animals. Do you remember that?
Right.
And so for several weeks in a row, I had the Play-Doh with my zoo animals. But I've not had the Play-Doh out. But I think I will have it out in this next week or two. Dig through my cookie cutters. And the other idea is to take your green Play-Doh and make it big like a Christmas tree. So make it in a cone shape or a tree shape so that it looks like a tree. And then decorate that with, you could use buttons, you could use any kind of little sparkly, those little sequins or something you could get from the craft section, or any little bead or something like that. That would be a lot of fun. I think kids would really want to.
Yeah, that's cute.
Yeah. And when I saw that idea is in one of those blogs. I thought, okay, that's a winner. I've never done that, and I can use that because I think that's really fun. But you'll have to dig through your crafts and arts and crafts supplies to get fun little things that you could stick in the Play-Doh.
Right. Well, and you know, Dollar Tree always has some of that stuff for really cheap, too. For a couple bucks, you could get an assortment of stuff to stick in there. That's a cute one.
Walmart.
I can see that.
Yeah, that's a cute one, I think. And Walmart has a cute little craft section, usually, if you have a bigger Walmart.
Right.
I bought some bigger sequin pieces for something else back in the summer, and I haven't used them. And so I thought, oh, I'm going to dig and get that package of those bigger sequins and let kids do that, because I think that would be a lot of fun. And I think you could reuse that. I don't, you know, unless I can't imagine that, it, you know, they might have green Play-Doh stuck on them for the next kid, but who cares about that? And just right. be able to reuse that over and over. Or you could have a kid, you know, talk to a mom about, I want to make a Christmas tree out of green Play-Doh. Do you have that? This might be something fun for you guys to do, too. And then they could keep the tree and do it themselves. You know, a mom may not want to do that, but there are some moms who would think that was fun. And then the kid could, you know, look at his Christmas tree or talk about his tree or whatever, you know, if he kept it, if he made it with his own Play-Doh and you didn't make it with yours. That might be a fun little thing to do the week right before you don't see them anymore, before Christmas.
Right.
The last thing I wanted to mention is my Maisie Christmas book that I got a long time ago. You know, I am not a consistent book user in therapy, especially with kids who hate it, but for kids who like it, or for kids who they're getting close to three, and I'm thinking, oh boy, you're really going to be tested with pictures. You need to start liking this a little bit. I have a really cute Maisie book that I've had for a long, long time that's Christmas themed, that is just precious. So I thought I would mention that, because I always get that out every year and have a kid or two at least who likes that. Do you have any Christmas books that you use, Kate?
You know, I have some, and I guess I must not have had much success because I haven't used them consistently in recent years.
Put
so
away.
I'm with you on
yeah.
the book thing. Like, that's
I don't
a good
use it
theory.
Very...
Most of the kids we see do
yeah.
not really love books. So.
Right. This little Maisie book is cute, and I'll tell you another way that I use it. If I have kids, usually kids that like arts and craft kinds of projects, and again, I'm not a therapist that does that consistently, but around Christmas time, that's sometimes a lot of fun. And so there's a Christmas tree in that book that's like you lift the flaps, and there are presents under the leaves there, or, you know, the level of the tree that you've lifted up. So I did this in when we had playgroup, you know, a long time ago, and I've made it with some kids since then. And again, these are higher level kids. You wouldn't make it with kids that were developmentally 12 months or 18 months. They're not ready yet. They're probably going to eat the paper or tear it up or
right.
do something besides be interested in it. You know, you're not going to do it with your kids unless they are developmentally 2.5 or above. But I would cut out triangles that look like, you know, we read the Maisie book and then we make a Christmas tree like the Maisie book. And if you just cut out three triangles and then fold the top of the triangle or the peak there, you can open it like it's a flap, and then you put stickers under there, and it looks just like you made it from the book. And some kids have gotten a real kick out of that, and they think that's mm-hmm. funny. And you pick stickers that for things that they can say or that you want them to say. And again, you know, Christmas-related things, ho-ho or candy, or, you know, if they like Lightning McQueen, you could get that sticker and put it there. So that's a cute little idea. But again, it's not an idea that would work for every kid. It would be your higher level, your kids who are developmentally a little further along. But that's an activity that I've had success with in previous years.
Unfortunately,
and that's what I always
Laura,
think about.
I'm not even sure our very best ideas work for every kid. You
that's
know?
The truth,
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Right. It's a numbers
yeah.
game. Our best work for most, and then there are some that it just really takes that specific kid. So.
Yeah. And so if you have crafty kids that like that, or if a mom is listening for her own kids, and sometimes she'll have kids that are apraxic who like developmentally appropriate things, or even may like things that are a little ahead cognitively of what you would think they would like. My daughter, Macy, you know, who is typically developing, loved that kind of crafty stuff. Your daughter, did both
Laura,
your daughters
yeah.
like? Yeah, Laura liked that. And the older Macy gets, the more I think she's like Laura with some of her interest in things. Just how it's funny when you have a friend with a child who's older than yours, and then you see kind of the patterns following along. And Macy liked crafty kind of things like that too when she was too. She could have been at the table for hours doing that sort of thing. Now, we probably, as speech-language pathologists and early interventionists, developmental interventionists, probably don't have many kids like that on our caseloads. But every once in a while, you'll find a kid who is into that sort of thing. So that would be an activity to do. All right, so hopefully we've given you some ideas to carry you through these how many ever weeks you're working in December. I remember a lot of years I worked all 4 weeks in December, and I haven't done that the past couple of years, but for a whole lot of years I would only take off those day or two before or day or two after, and that was it. So if you are needing some new ideas to carry you through, I hope that you've gotten some things to spice up your sessions for the month of December.
I think there were a lot of good ones that I'm going to have to get together real quick.
Don't order the Christmas tree, because I ordered you one, and I hope it gets here speedy fast so you have time to use it.
I'm thrilled. I was looking to see how long the delivery was. I'm like, ooh, that's cute. It's really cute.
It's really cute. I haven't used it with a kid yet, but I've used it for the video for the DVD. So it was. I think it's going to be a winner. I think it's really, really cute. All right. So does that do it for us today?
I think it does.
I want to say we will not be having a show next Sunday night because I won't be home yet. We're doing a really fun family weekend out of town next week. And, I went to a college basketball game yesterday. Next week I'm going to a professional football game. This must be the
Whose game?
Titans Saints in New Orleans Nashville. I'm sorry, not New Orleans, in Nashville.
I was going to say, wait, isn't that Nashville? I can see you're a big pro football fan.
I know. I barely know what town I'm going to. The big thing next weekend for me, though, is to see the Rockettes in Nashville. So I'm so excited. Macy and I saw them a couple years ago, when she was in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. We saw the Rockettes in New York City, and Johnny has heard us talk about that so much, he decided several weeks ago to take us to Nashville to do that again. So, yay, I'm going to have such a fun weekend again next weekend, too. So, and the boys are going, our older boys, so.
Cool.
That'll be exciting for all of us to be together like that. So, anyway.
Yeah,
all right. Well, I think that about does it for tonight's show. I hope you've enjoyed the therapy activities. Give us some feedback for any of you listening that has some cute ideas that we didn't mention. Let us know. We're always looking for new fun things to do.
Thanks, Laura.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.